Doc Leipzig, the oldest festival for animation and documentary in the world, is happening in a hybrid format in 2020. We're embracing the opportunities that come along with it. Welcome to the new Doc Industry Program podcast, realized in collaboration with What's Up with Docs, the Programmers of Color Collective, and independent film industry curator Temba Bebe. Welcome to a series of discussions on subjects such as story sovereignty, diversity and inclusion in the documentary industry, and decolonizing our industry in general. These podcasts are funded by Creative Europe, the City of Leipzig, the BKM, and MDM. We thank our partners and supporters for their contributions. Enjoy.
So, first of all, we're so happy to be here for this podcast recording, which is commissioned by Doc Leipzig, the oldest documentary and animation film festival in the world. We are gathered here to talk about the work of Safi Fay, a Senegalese filmmaker who also has a little bit of history with Doc Leipzig. In fact, some of her films have premiered at this festival decades ago. And we have gathered here Rosine Bakum and Mehem Bonetti, and we'll have them introduce themselves in a second. But first of all, I did want to explain a little bit what these podcasts are for. They're organized primarily by Lucy Mukherjee out of the Programmers of Color Collective, POC Squared, or POC 2. And I'm a member of this collective, and it really is independent and film festival programmers. A lot of us are based in North America, but we also live all around the world. And it's about finding community with each other when we're working in spaces, uplifting each other's voices, and then also uplifting the voices and championing the voices of filmmakers who are making work from and for their own communities as well. So the subject of what we will be talking about matters quite a bit to me, because my name is Abby Sun, and I am a former film festival programmer for festivals like True False. Currently, I program an independent documentary series that, when we were all in person, is hosted at the Brattle Theater in Cambridge, Massachusetts in the US, called The Dockyard. And my own training is actually in ethnographic filmmaking as an undergrad student at Harvard in sensory ethnography. So one thing that has long been interesting to me, especially now with a lot of language around quote-unquote decolonizing documentary, is this long history of ethnographic filmmaking from not just the African continent, but also from sub-Saharan Africa, from third world cinema filmmakers, that movement, who have been working within and out of the ethnographic tradition. It's critiques of ethnography, of colonial film units, are new. And I think one of the things I'm super interested in right now is in questioning what it takes to excavate our own histories around all of this. So gathered here, I have Mehen, if you could introduce yourself and your decades of experience as a programmer and curator and festival organizer.
Yes, I'm Mehen Bonetti, and I'm the founder and director of the African Film Festival, Inc., an organization that was founded in 1990 as a dynamic platform dedicated to increasing exposure to African arts and culture through the screening of cinematic works made by and about people of African descent. I come from another direction because I studied communication, advertising, and my interest that brought me to this space was, for so long I felt that images about people of African descent was based on images that we did not control. And also, I had been in the States for maybe about 10 years when a crisis was taking place on our continent. And as long as I'd been here, that was a peak of coverage about these, you know, my continent, my people, because of the situation in Ethiopia, which, juxtapositioned with the demarcation of a people of African descent who were Americans, being the term being applied to them as African Americans. And so these two things were happening simultaneously, where you saw these images of starving children and you know, harrowing images, but there was never any context, you know? So I felt that, okay, where is my backstory? Where's that backstory? How do we get to a place like this? And I was really frustrated. And at the same time, there was this celebration going on about African American people of African descent who had been brought here in chains and now have this sort of, you know, recognition of being of African descent. And once again, I did not see my face or hear my voice in that discussion. And I thought, okay, something has to be, you know, I mean, yes, indeed, that was a reality of what was going on in Ethiopia. And this here in this space that I was, you know, standing on in America also was a reality to my history. But where is the backstory? Why am I not part of that conversation? You know, I want to be also, I also want to hear my voice, you know, and be a participant in that conversation about me. And, I was what you would consider a sort of, you know, a Sunday painter, the way I love cinema. So I would, I was working at the time at Newsweek, and these were the days when you had those 2-hour lunches. And I would go to the theaters, and this is when also you had a lot of art house theaters still in New York in the late 70s, early 80s. And at times I was the only one in there with the projectionist. And for me, this was my way of, you know, discovering the rest of the world, of identifying with a character and also, you know, underscoring that belief that we are one people, because even if that person did not look like me or spoke a language I didn't understand, I understood that character. And then I discovered African. That's how I came into that space also of discovering films made by African directors. I first saw a film by Sam Ben. And because when the term African cinema, even I have to say, was ignorant about what that meant. Was it a documentary about wildlife? Was it the Coca-Cola film they did? Was it, you know, I Think the Gods Must Be Crazy, which was a huge hit here. And then I discovered Sam Ben's films. And someone described it as, you know, dipping your foot in the stream and the temperature feels a certain way. And then you go back, you know, maybe a year later, and you dip your foot in that stream, and then it feels familiar. You know, the temperature is familiar. And that's how I felt seeing Chedo at the time. And I think the theater was really hot, and I think I even fell asleep. And then I went back, and the floodgates opened, you might say, or the light bulb went on. So yeah, the rest is history.
And then that's led, and we will be talking later on in this recording a little bit about what Mahen has been doing in terms of the archival space with the African Film Festival. But yeah, Rosane, if you could introduce yourself, the wonderful films that you've made, which also are connected to Doc Leipzig in a way, your films, in their premiere history. But also, I'm curious, this stream that Mahen just described stepping into when she saw some Ben's films for the first time, have you also stepped into that stream at a later state or had a similar experience in terms of your journey towards becoming a filmmaker?
For me, it was also frustration to not see myself on the screen. My desire of cinema is not coming of a culture of cinema. I didn't have a family member who was doing cinema. I just have a real desire and necessity to see myself, to see my daily life, and to see my culture on the TV. It was not the case in Cameroon at that time. I was just seeing Africa in the lens of West filmmaker. For me, it was what I was seeing in the cinema was opening me to the world, but not enough to my culture and to what I was living. And me also, I saw Le Mandat of Sam Ben Usman. It was a revolutionary for me because I was thinking that it was a woman.
Yes, right.
Because the way that he was filming a man, for me, was revolutionary because it was like it's a woman who is watching a man like that. It was not, for me, it was not a man who was watching another man, another African man. And Semen for me is the filmmaker that I really connect with because I really love the rage of saying things really with not putting how can I say it? It's a punch like this.
Yeah, clean cut. Yes.
What the cinema is because I don't want to do the cinema like that. I want to say things like it is. And Sam Ben is teach me, the film of Sam Ben Usman teach me how to say it. And the way that his film woman, I really connect with that way. And I came here 10 years ago to learn to do cinema. And in my school of cinema, I really understand that the cinema that I want to do have no place there. That I want to learn. Mm. After learning doing cinema, Western cinema, I have to learn to do my cinema. I have to learn to do my way of looking, my people, my community. And the three films that I did, it's an experimentation of finding my way of looking my people, my culture, because the way that I was looking them, it was the reproduction of what I was seeing in the Western cinema and the way that the West was looking Africa. Now I have to deconstruct that. And doing my cinema today is to deconstruct that and to find my way of relooking my history, reinvent my history, because today my history is I don't know how to say it in English. It is in the bubble of the heritage of the colonialism. And I have to remove all the layers of that colonialism to find my own story, to find, to find my history and to find my way of doing cinema. And in today, all my film is an experimentation to finding that my history and to decolonize my gaze, to decolonize my way of making cinema.
Yeah.
Now I was just going to comment on when Rosine said she wanted to deconstruct, you know, like peel away the layers. For me also, at that moment, I thought, okay, I'm standing in this space and there are all these, you know, moving parts. But then when I look at the foundation of what constitutes American history, Africa is the foundation, you know? And I think, yes, okay, Black people were brought here, quote unquote, as, you know, for labor, but, you know, with against their own will, as far as I'm concerned. And, but what they also brought was the brain drain in Africa started with the slave trade, you know? And when Michelle Obama says, I wake up every morning by a house built by slaves, you know, designed by slaves. Anyway, so for me, I also looked at, I wanted to look at that premises of what constitutes American culture in order to form this organization and to use that as a springboard in order to go into communities for people to digest what I was trying to, or what my group was trying to achieve, because we did that before we started, you know, actually executing programs, was have a discussion. Anyway, I'm sorry, I don't mean to hog your time, but.
No, I think, Mahan, that's so, I mean, to me, I think a lot of that reflects even like filmmaking practices, right? It's that, if you're making films with and for community first, then you don't, you know, go in with the preformed idea.
Absolutely.
You go absolutely ahead of time and you,
yes,
you know,
make respecting
sure that, exactly. Yeah. And I think that applies for a lot of things. And I think it's really wonderful, Mahan, to hear that that's what you did for the film festival as well. Because I think that's so rare still. I wanted to sort of address this idea of deconstructing the colonial bubble regime that you were just talking about, because when Mahan and I were talking before this conversation, we were talking about sort of whether or not perhaps filmmakers feel that in order to get the education and the connections to industry, that they have to go to Europe for a European film school education, or whether or not they need to come into contact with someone like John Roosh to introduce them to filmmaking techniques or anything like that. Or if there's, for instance, there are more and more filmmakers who I think are really staying in Africa, for instance, also in South Asia, Southeast Asia, East Asia, and really trying to filmmaking communities where they are. And Rosine, I know we've talked in the past, you have told me that you want to return to Cameroon, that staying in Belgium is not the end goal, for instance. So, for instance, Safi Fay, I think, had a different perhaps approach to this. I do think that her films are super interesting when it comes to what are the things that you can do in the making of a film in order to push back on colonial film techniques. For instance, she is, you know, some of, in her films, people are talking about themselves, which seems like such a basic thing to do at this point. But I think when she was making her first films, like Kadu Bekat, Fajal, this was quite unusual for someone to be making a film and then for people to be giving long testimonials of themselves. And it's not the voice of the filmmaker that's explaining to the audience what's happening. So Rosine, I'm curious, like in yours, how, if you can talk a little bit more about that and whether or not there are examples of films for you that have proven instructive, or whether it's more really more process oriented for you to discover how to perhaps not be using film language that you don't want to be using.
Except Sam Ben Ousmane, Safi Fay, I didn't know Safi Fay before. It's really the problem of that, because in my imaginary, I didn't have a culture of my own cinema. I didn't have it before coming here in Brussels to study cinema. I didn't have it. I the first film that I saw, it was in the cinema in Cameroon. It was Danka of Thierry Michel. It was a horrible film in the same year in Cameroon. In the hospital, it was horrible. It was an horrible experience for me in cinema. But when I saw Sembène, it was for me, my imagination was open. Mm-hmm. I was looking all the possibility of imagining my own history. And I think that the film of Safify is the way, is a kind of way of reappropriation of what is our history. But when I saw her, I saw Mossan, is for me is a response to the colonial film, to say that this is how we see people, this is how we connect with people, this is how, yes, this is our gaze in our people. And I can compare the Mossan with the first Cameroonian film, Monamoto. Is the same story. It's, for me, it's the same story. And it's what, at that moment, a form of reappropriation to see, and a response to the colonial film, to say that this is our story. It's just simple. It's people who are talking about her daily life, what they are. They just, yes, they don't question. They don't question. They just film people that live, yes. And for me, the film of Safify is just a response of that. When I see it now, it's a response of that. And me today, what I'm doing, I cannot say that. When I'm doing my film, I'm not saying that I'm doing ethnologic film, and I just saying I want to find the way to build a real relationship with the people that I film, to find what is not colonialized in the way of living. When in Chez Jolie Coiffure, my film, and when I film Sabine in her hair salon, is I wanted to, my idea was not to do another film of immigration. Mm-hmm. It was to do a film that will shift a gaze of people who will see the film. That I wanted to, that the, I want, for me, I wanted to take the place of Sabine, to live what she lives every day, and to feel what she feels every day, and to also connect with her in the way that she is not in the representation of what the society wants her to be, but to be what she wants to be. And she, to really decolonize the way of seeing immigration in Belgium and in the world in general. And when there is a sequence in Chez Jolie Coiffure, in all my film, where I can say that in that sequence, the character is decolonized herself in the society where she lives and her thoughts. And it's the sequences where Sabine she's talking about the white people, the way that the old white people came in Africa and take the young girls. And for me, it was the first time, it's a speech that we usually as African talk in the background, but not say that in the front. But Sabine, by saying it in the front, she's saying that I'm not afraid. I'm not in representation of what you want me to be. I'm just me and want to say what I'm thinking. And for me, it's a way. And in my first film, the two faces of Bamileke woman, in the process, the first sequence, it's my mother, it's telling me that I want you to do the cinema that you want to do. When she gave me her definition of the cinema, that the cinema for her is her way of living. She asked me to just film her way of living, to find my way to film her. And for many people who was just with the scenario of my film was not thinking that my mother is able to say that. Mm-hmm. They was thinking that my mother is not funny enough to be a character of a film, like all African has to be funny and know to dance. And in all the film, my mother is changing, for me also, the way of thinking that the African mother can be, the African mother can talk and all of that. And yes, in my practice, I really find that. I really find in my process of live my prejudice of what I'm thinking of my character, because me also, I have it because I'm colonized. I have to deconstruct that gaze to find my real way.
Absolutely.
Me also, when I was seeing Sabine, when I was seeing my mother, I was not thinking that my mother was able to have a political speech. When she positioned herself in the political situation of Cameroon, she was telling me that she can think and she know how things work. She's not going to school or all of those things, but she can think. And it's a response also to people who think that in Africa we cannot do a film, that people can think, people can position themselves and stand by themselves. And my cinema is that. Me also, I have to just find my way of saying that I'm not doing African cinema, I'm doing cinema. Because also that word is a condescendency of sometimes the West to our cinema. It's like we say in French, it's double tranchant.
Yeah, I'm curious about the term African cinema, Mahan. Is there any potential for it to be reappropriated or rehabilitated?
Well, I was just going to say because Rosine, going back to just to comment about her talking about reappropriating and also that intersection where we all meet our diaspora, in the diaspora, the awakening that happens, you know? And then going back and looking at her mother and her mother's sisters, perhaps they were always like that, but there is an awakening that happened in Rosine to see that part of, you know, that characteristic of her mother and her sisters. That's another conversation for another time. But speaking of African cinema, I think when you put African cinema together, it's really a powerful word. It's a powerful, you know, construction of labeling something. And if I were to say it's derogatory, then what do I say about the name of our organization? And then also, whose yardstick am I using to measure that Africa and cinema is something that's bad or colonial, or maybe I'm reappropriating something, you know? I mean, and for me, it's a term that represents pride. When I think of Africa and I think of the moving image, like Semben said, it's like night school for us, because we come from an oral tradition. And this, you know, this seventh art is where we can record something, and the urgency to record that history and pass it along to make sure, like, someone like Rosine's children have a, especially today when you think, I mean, who would have imagined, and he maybe foresaw it, that, you know, putting words on paper are almost becoming obsolete. So now this technology has taken over, and this is a quick study, he said. It's like night school, you know, you're cramming to get everything in. And for me, I mean, the way we program, I'm not assuming everyone knows, and neither am I assuming that the ones who know everything, because we're all learning, okay? So, and I'm living in a place where, you know, I'm looking at the space, as I said, you know, we did the research, we spoke to people. You have to have an understanding of the people who are gonna come to patronize your program, whatever you've created. And even some Africans don't know the capital of my country, of Rosine's country. So I am saying African cinema, and then I'm going to deconstruct what that means. So when we do programs, we're doing also regional focuses. We're highlighting a generational voice. We're talking about current events. Like this year is the 60th anniversary of Nigeria. How many Nigerians even know that, or other Africans? So we're doing these sorts of mini programs under this umbrella of African cinema. Because when I also say African cinema, that Africa is in the world. Because when I say that from Argentina up to Nova Scotia, Africa's footprints is in everyone's cultural references in this country. That is what Africa gave the Americas. So we are all benefiting from this culture. We're all benefiting from this cinema. So for me, I have reappropriated the word, because I'm using my yardstick when I speak about me, my people, and I'm not looking at someone else to define me, because that is what colonialism has done to us, you know? And then you have these leaders, so it's like, who are you trying to allow to define your beauty, your success? What does that mean? Your skin color, you know? So we should check. So for me, what I'm doing is, for we as people, first and foremost, of when I say we went into the community to have that conversation, it's like, you know, Rosine will understand this. When you're going to into a town or a space in Africa, you go meet the head person, normally the chief. And that is that person, she or he, you talk to first to almost, you know, pay your respects. And that person calls their subjects, and those subjects come and support you. And so this is what we did with our community. And this is what I think has endeared us to people of African descent in this community. Because when we first started, I was told, no, there's no interest, you won't find them. I'm like, you know, that's kind of offensive. Why wouldn't someone want to learn about themselves, especially if they're the ones telling their own stories? And you find the disparity of, you know, how does someone, information is really key also. How does information filter into these communities? And how, anyway, I see you want to ask something. I have to stop.
Well, it's related to what you were saying, Mahen. So thank you for all of this. It's on the topic of finding out about our own histories specifically, mm-hmm. because one thing that I have noticed that is quite common as theaters and cinemas are doing retrospectives of work from classic, quote unquote, African cinema filmmakers, especially I think after Black Lives Matter protests this summer around the world, I find that a lot of mainstream institutions are very much now interested in spotlighting work from mm-hmm. Black filmmakers, from diaspora filmmakers. And for me, kind of the big question is, why isn't the work of a female filmmaker like Safi Faye, what has happened in the history of her work and in the history of the exhibition of her work that's made it less well known, for instance, than the work of Sembène or of perhaps male Senegalese filmmakers. Mm-hmm. Mahen, I know you know a little bit about the exhibition history and some of what Safi Faye has had to go through. I'm mm-hmm. curious if you can describe that to all of us.
Well, you know, I don't know if Rosine has attended FISPACO, you know, to think that, and this is where this is the upside of technology. But for years, when Rosine said she had to see these films in the diaspora, so was it for me. That's where I discovered this seventh art, and to realize there's this body of work that has been made by people of African descent. You don't have access to those, that you know, library or that book in your respective countries on the continent. So it's when you come outside, or when FESPACO happened, that's when a lot of us got to see these works. And then also the format, you know, that elitism of 35 millimeter or video, where a lot of, and then this is talking about how the colonial lens infiltrates your thinking, where, you know, when the Nigerians started doing video, everyone turned their nose at them saying, oh my God, you know, video has, you know, and now everyone realizes this is the way to go to sort of reclaim your autonomy, your independence. So coming back to your question, a lot of these filmmakers or people who are interested now, who have come of age, when we do classic works, you know, it's packed. Like when Safi came, or when Suleiman was, you were here, Rosine, when Suleiman mm-hmm. was here. I mean, even the griot showed up. You yeah. know, it was, yeah.
Yeah, celebration.
Yeah. And then, but these older filmmakers, there's something else to them, because they're like, okay, you know how long I've worked? So then really, like your mom and her sisters, there's a slyness to old people that really, so you think you're coming in with all this knowledge, and they will spin rings around your neck, you know? So in a way, even though you, I understand, you know, so you have to pamper them, pay homage to them. But the fact that there's so many people who have come of age who are ready to go back into that space, because now there's this humbleness that, okay, maybe I know the technology, maybe I can drive with two hands on two wheels, but these people have been there steady and slow, and they will be there after I leave. That is that, you know, the backbone on which I stand. And so whenever we show classic works, it's packed with young people, and it makes them feel good, because, you know, they've been paying homage to, and maybe they've waited 50 years, but, you know, it's come full circle for them. And I think coming back to this generation also, this is why we don't differentiate between, we try to show the gamut, you know, to have an overview of people who are doing really independent, truly independent works, who are maybe shooting on their phones and who are doing experimental works, but it's always about the story. Because for me, then the sort of technique or quality, because if a story is like captivating, the quality, the technology becomes secondary almost, because you're captivated by story. And there was one time when Sam Ben came to our festival, I think one of the last times he was here before he passed. And there was a young filmmaker who had just done her first short. And I don't know if it was Ramatu Keita, you know, who, and first of all, he was impressed about how many women were coming to our pro, you know, whose works we were presenting. And it's not that we even make a, we go out to, yes, of course, we're mindful of that, but they know where to come to, because they know that there's someone who cares to even, you know, consider. I mean, last year's, or the program he came to, half of those films were done by women. So And it was not designed that way. It just so happened that way, which I love. So it's an organic process, you know? And so when these two women were at the table speaking about the theme of Mulad, and he wanted to inject, you know, insert his voice, they totally ignored him. And he was beaming because he felt he had done his job. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that for me, I don't know if I answered your question in a long-winded way, but yeah. So you're really proud to, I love the cinema. I love what Rosine and her, you know, fellow filmmakers are doing, because they're really giving us a face and a voice. And what makes me even proud is that they are educated in both their traditional and formal and Western cultures or colonial cultures. So, you know, you're proud that this person is coming and then they know the colonial culture. So they have this advantage because they've straddled all these worlds. And that makes me really proud. And I want to, you know, hopefully give them a platform that is of quality, consistency, and because they deserve it. They're telling our stories, you know? Yeah. Anyway.
Well, I have, we're about coming up on the end of the 45 minutes. So to wrap us up, I want to, so for instance, one of the purposes of this podcast is to talk more about work that we felt like wasn't as well known or should be more well known, for instance, in the documentary industry. Of course, that's a very broad question, and it of course begs the question to what parts of the documentary industry, to who in the film festival landscape, you know, different places have different canons, have different films that we hold dear, for instance. But if one were to try to look for the history and to try to find the films by Mahan, as you put it, by classic African filmmakers, in the US at least, it can sometimes be really hard to find these films and to know what's happening. Mm-hmm. So for me, the FESPACO website is an amazing, amazing resource. But I'm curious for both of you, where have you seen these films? And also Mahan, if you could tell us about the new website that you have made.
Abby, when you mentioned, you know, how can you see Safi's films or words, it's still a work in progress, you know, and there's still a lot of younger filmmakers or emerging filmmakers who, especially in the continent, who don't have access to this work. Mm-hmm. So when someone like Safi, maybe it took a while for her work to become available. In fact, it's because she fought for the right to own her intellectual property. And now she has it. And sometimes that fight can take so much out of you, you know? But I'm proud that, you know, at the end of the day, no matter what happens, she owns the rights to her work. And so what we try to do, it's not only like we work with organizations, we partner with people in Brazil, in Nigeria, in Kenya. And in fact, right now I'm working with an organization in Bahia, and they're going to do a classic. I put them together with Musa Senaps, and they will show one of his older films. And then speaking of our website, it's become a sort of resource. I mean, it always was, but I think the 5 months, I call it a gem in the rough. The rough being the corona and the gem being this website.
You went stir crazy in the most productive way possible.
And so, and that same organization in Brazil, they're translating now an article that we posted like 10 years ago. They're translating it in Portuguese because it's relevant to what is happening in their society right now. So this is what makes me happy. And so I don't know if you've gotten a chance to see the website, Rosine.
No.
Oh, you have to look
you
at
must.
It.
Yes,
I'm happy it brings it up. I'm so proud. So the thing is, these young diasporians, you know, when I'm speaking of the emerging directors coming of age who now have a smell and a taste and they want to learn about people like Mariam Ahima. And speaking of Safi, Mariam Ahima, Felix Sambanjai, they were making films about the environment before we even knew the word, you know, because that's what they're talking about, you know. It's a lot of Safi's films, she's talking about this urgency to hold on to a tradition of survival, your food culture, you know, environmental degree, you know, the land, the deforestation. And so they were talking about these things way before the term was coined, because they're living it, you know, they're living, this is, it's amazing. So I think there's that generation that has come of age now that wants to proudly absorb this information and share it. Likewise, the website, they're all, at one time we couldn't even, during so-called normal times, we didn't have, never had enough money or the time, or those people were busy. And this situation we find ourselves, all of these, you know, elements came together. So they are good. And what is also great about what has come out of this moment is that through this technology, we're all discovering how wide our diaspora is and how much talent is out there. And it's like this will live on even when we go back to learning how to crawl and walk again. So the website was designed as a collective of people who feel they own this organization, who want to contribute to it, and the social media pages. So I'm now even more confident that it will live beyond me.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Because also, because you have to be crazy to be doing this work. It's thankless on many levels. It's like, you know, but at the same time, it is so rich, it is so important, and it cannot die with me. So when these kids, what they're doing makes me confident that it's going to live. And the young woman, Colombe, who just came, she's Ivorian American. She just, you know, she's starting out here. And when you land in here, you jump and you learn how to swim. That's how, and most of them have left and they all have great, they're doing, contributing greatly in different fields. But when AFF needs them, they all come back. So I'm proud of that. Yeah. All right. Yeah. It's a lot going on. And yeah, we're all connecting the dots through this, you know, this cold space. We're making it warm. We're bringing warmth to this whole space, right?
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's really about the ecosystem that we're forming with each other. And it's not about elevating just one film or one film.
Yes.
It's about creating a warm room, as you put it,
yes,
space. Because we need that warmth to survive. Just one person floating about in it.
Yes.
That's not the point to me. The point is that there are festivals and spaces that we can all support with our, not just money, but also time and attention. Mm-hmm. And that is what will make the ecosystem stronger by itself.
Because there are multiple stories. There are many, it's not one singular story. There are multiple stories, and the joy is discovering all these stories, mm-hmm, you know, that connect our dots.
Actually, can you tell us anything about the project that you're currently working on?
Finishing my next film, I this month, and it's called...
Oh, you're finishing this month, the edit?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, the post-production.
Okay.
And it's called The Prayer of Delphine. It's also a portrait of a young girl who was born in Cameroon and raised there and was prostitute, we can say that,
mm-hmm,
at 12 years, and and married a man, a Belgian man who have 3 times her age. And I'm also talking about the different form of colonization of Africa, because it's, that colonization is continuing. And the portrait of Delphine, it really represents the both society, the society of Africa who exposed that kind of young girl to that kind of life, and the West who is taking profit of that situation. And I really question the both society in that thing. And the project that Maëlle was talking is the Caravan Cinema that we launched 2 years ago in Cameroon. And it's also the way of reappropriation, because as African filmmaker, the only way that we can show our work is in Europe, it is in West, because in Africa we don't have infrastructure. I was really frustrated by that. For me, I wanted to just showing my film there, because I want to question people who's in Cameroon, not here. I want my film seen here. But the important for me is that the film can question people there. And we launched Caravan Cinema to do that. And we go back to show the films. The film of my mother, we go to all the places that I shoot the film, and we show the film to the people who was in the film and not. And for Chez Jolie Coiffure, we go to the family of Sabine to show them the film, and to also in many places in Cameroon. For me, it's also to have our independence, to not only wait that the West show our film. I can go back in Cameroon and show my film and show the film of another African filmmaker. Right. I create my own production society here in Belgium, because I need to have my independence to do the film that I want. Mm-hmm. And now Caravan Cinema helped me to just say to myself that now I can go back in Cameroon or another country in Africa with my material and show the film that I want to show, and question people and discuss with people and have the direct connection. It's like people, when I show Chez Jolie Coiffure in Cameroon, I was amazed of the way that I was not existing as a filmmaker, that the film was, it was only the film and the public. For me, it was so important to see that I'm not between the film and people, that people can take the film and take it as their own. And for me, it was how I was imagining my film. It's how, when I'm thinking of the film, I'm thinking also the way that I want that film to be shown in Cameroon. And for me, it's very important to have that opportunity it's the only way that we can renew our history, is the question that by seeing our own film directly, not only in the TV or directly.
Yeah, and I agree. And it's the way that you're touring the film around, and then also, you know, starting your own theater. I mean, to me, it's the same purpose that film festivals like Mahan's African Film Festivals play. It's the same role that they play, that it's not enough just to make things available that generate profit for other people, like that African filmmakers too have to, not just, as you said, own your own production companies, but you also need to own your own methods of distribution and to own your films as well.
Because as filmmaker, we, in every stage, in every step, we are discriminated because even in the festival, when my film was selected in Rotterdam Festival, they took it and put it in a focus of Africa as if my film is not enough a movie to be in the same, I don't know how to say it.
Yeah, to be
in the same program as
the same program as other films. For me, it's also a little bit condescendency of my cinema. If you think that my film is a film, how do you have to put it in a small focus of African film? For me, it's sometimes I don't understand that. I don't understand that. It's sometimes a way of discriminating, of saying that is African cinema, and I don't know, and I'm not okay with that also. And
that's
why I was saying that sometimes I define myself as African filmmaker because it is my singularity. Sometimes I don't use that word because it closes my work also, because if people who are using that word, not using it well, it closes my work because it is like a word of diaspora. Why? For me, it's burdening to use sometimes those words because it's closed me sometimes. It's closed me in the world, in that world. I'm beyond, my cinema is beyond African cinema.
Yeah.
It's cinema, it's story, and also me as a filmmaker. And it's why I was saying that, like we say in French, it's double tranché.
Double sworded.
Yes, and yes. And we have to deconstruct that to use it in the right way. That's my, as Maëlle was saying, it's my singularity to say that I'm African cinema because my journey is not the journey of a young Belgian filmmaker. I have my singularity, and the people who are I'm filming, it's their singularity, and it's why I can define myself as an African filmmaker. But sometimes people are using that word to just put me down, and I don't accept it.
Yeah, I think categories can be limiting as much as they can be liberatory, and I agree that it really depends on who is using the word and why they're using it. I think someone like Mahen, like can, for instance, use terms like diaspora and African cinema in celebratory and nuanced and complex ways, but when it is used to constrain what it is that you're doing, that's when we get into forms of colonial power structures.
That's why we define it in so many ways, and hopefully someone catches up with us. But also, when coming back to Rosine's project, as I was saying, I use the word African cinema, and I use the word reappropriation because for me, it's about us looking within, because we are traumatized as a people. We've been separated, we've been, chained, we've been... Colonialism and slavery had the same impact on the Black person. you know, on our side. So for me, I want us to be big enough to have that mirror like Semben put to our face, to be self-critical, but also to celebrate what we've given the world. And why I'm doing this is for the general public, but also for we as a diaspora, as a people of African descent, to sort of relearn our, you know, to love ourselves again, and to understand ourselves, and to have a conversation about these multiple stories that constitute, you know, who we are. And so in a way, when I say put the two words together, it's very powerful. Mm-hmm. It is, you know, it's, there's an urgency to it. And I really appreciate sharing this conversation with all of you today. Because I have to run. And I'm going to call her. Oh, yeah, coming back, not only just plaster it, but structure it to show the process. Because when people say, oh, I can't, I don't have enough money, I don't have this, you know, it's. I'm not saying it's laziness, but really, you have to be resourceful. Everyone has, as an artist probably, and not only as an African artist, artists in general have to be resourceful. Oh, he left? For us. And at the end of the day, when I see, you know, this new generation, like when we do the classic work, so who writes to say, like her, I want to volunteer, and then eventually you become a staff member. That makes me feel really happy and proud. Yeah. Okay, thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.